Welcome everyone to today's podcast. What I'm going to discuss today is something that has come out of a discussion I had with one of my students recently. We were chatting about negotiating on a deal, and the particular student was very excited about going through the process, but really had no idea of how to structure the negotiation. Because like anything, negotiation is a structured process. And there's certain steps to take when deciding on how to negotiate and what price and all of these other things that come into play. So that's going to be the topic of my discussion today. So let's first of all start with preparation, because preparation is vitally important with absolutely everything that you do, no matter whether we're talking about negotiation, whether we're talking about selling a property, whether we're talking about engaging a real estate agent or any of those things. Preparation is vitally important. The more you know about anything, the better decisions you're going to make. And preparation really is just another word for finding out as much as you possibly can. It's a learning process, an education process. So the first thing you're going to have to find out about when you're looking to either buy or sell a property is your comparable sales analysis. Now, residential real estate is valued and sold on comparable sales, as in what a comparable property in a similar market is selling for. It's what the market value actually is. So how do you find that out? Well, there's some easy ways to do that. The first thing that I would do to have a bit of a look around is go onto the internet and have a look at the websites. I would start to have a look at what's for sale, first of all, and see what things are listing for. I'd do a bit of a quick flick over the type of property. If I was looking for a particular type of property to buy, I'd put in those specifics, as in how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, all of those sort of things. If I was looking for to sell a property, then I'd put in the particulars of the property I was trying to sell. So you get similar types of property to what you're either looking for or what you're trying to sell. Now I look at the for sales first, which is what a lot of people don't do. But I like to get an idea of what things are listed for. It doesn't mean that they're going to sell at that, but it's certainly what they're actually listed for. And in doing that, I like to create a file. So one of the things that I do is I like to have two computers or two screens where on one screen I'm researching and on the other screen I'm actually saving. So I'm creating a file of my collected data and whatever that actually looks like. So I've got these two files being created, and I'm bringing across pictures of the property. I'm bringing across the contact details of a property. I'm bringing across a brief description of the property. So very quickly, I can assess in visual terms, because I'm very visual, what the price range is for the particular type of property that I'm looking at. Then I'll go to the sale, the sold section of the websites. Now, I don't care whether you use Domain or realestate.com or, there's plenty of them around, but I would use probably both of those main ones because they have the majority of the listings. So then I would look at what's been sold. So again, you put in your search criteria as being exactly what you're either looking for or exactly what you're selling, and see what comes up. See what comes up as being sold. See what comes up as being, the similar type of property with the type of parameters that, your particular property has or the one you're looking for. And then, again, you start to create a file of those. So I would start to bring across the pictures, bring across the selling agent. I would bring across, a brief description of the property. So you can really start to assess where the price range is for the type of property you're looking for. Now, if you spent half an hour to three quarters of an hour doing that in any target area, you are going to know that area. You are going to know what the minimum prices have been and what's sold and what the top prices have been. If you want to take it another step further, particularly if you're talking about a particular suburb, something that's very handy to do is to actually plot them on a map. Now, like I say, I'm very visual, so I like to see these properties, and I know you can do that with Google and whatever else, but I like to have a big map. I like to see where they are. I like to see, you know, what streets they're in, and, you know, was this one sold for more than that one because it had views or because it was near the park, or, you know, was it the condition of the property? You know, all of those types of things start to make a difference. And then by then you've really got a handle on the particular area. Now, we haven't even started to negotiate on a particular property yet. All we've done is really do our background research on an area. You can do this with a number of programs as well. You know, there's programs like, you know, Price Finder and RP Data and things like that that will consolidate a lot of this information. But really, I like to do it this manual way because it gives you a better understanding. It's not like a black box where you stick a couple of parameters in and all of this information pops out. What I find is people don't understand that. And unless you're actually going through the process from the beginning to the end, you don't understand all the dynamics and all the ins and outs of things. It's not going to take long. People think this takes forever. It's not. You know, within an hour, you've got a really, really good handle on your particular area. The other thing that comes out of this research is that you know who's the better agents. You know, you can see when you look at a property how long it's been listed for, you know, and with which agent. How many times has that agent actually been changed over? Who's selling? Who's selling the most type of properties in the area where you want to buy or sell? And of the type of property that you're focusing on. That's very important. It's important, obviously, if you're going to list a property because you want to be dealing with those who sell the most. And it's also good to gauge from a buyer's perspective who the players are. Now, what I've noticed over a number of years is that some agents are fantastic at selling. So they will always seem to get the premium price, they sell in the shortest space of time, all of those sort of things. Doesn't necessarily mean they're the best to buy from. I actually like buying from the crappy agents. I like buying from the ones who perhaps have long days on the market, don't market particularly well, they take photographs of the property themselves, they don't get professional photographs taken, you know, they might even be an out-of-area agent, all of those sort of things. So you can start to really create a catalogue of agents as well, and you can even rank them as to which agents are better than others. So that's the first thing. That's all in that preparation stage. You've then got to consider, okay, well, what am I prepared to pay? If this is the range, what's my tap out point? What am I prepared to pay, and what's my point where I go, no, it's too dear, I'm pulling out? Because that's important, particularly these days where there's so many auctions. You know, when you've got a lot of auctions, you can get very carried away at an auction about the pricing and, oh my goodness, I'm going to get out, and what did that person do, and am I up to the next one, and all of this sort of thing, which really doesn't serve you if you're buying at an auction. So you need to be very, very certain as to what your tap out point actually is. You've then got to think about the type of clauses that are going to suit you. And again, I would be writing all of this stuff down. I would write it down so I've got it all there. I know, you know, what my parameters are. So, you know, finance. Do you need a finance clause? Okay, we need a finance clause. You're obviously going to need a pest and building inspection clauses in there to your satisfaction. What else do you need? Do you need terms? You know, how long do you need the finance clause to be? How long does it take to get a valuer out in that particular area to get the finance approved? You know, all of these sorts of things start to add up. Then you've got things like the special conditions that you might need. You might need a longer settlement. You might be able to go for a shorter settlement. You know, what kind of deposit do you need to put down? So just think through a little bit what the actual time frames and what your conditions on the clauses need to be. And it's important at this stage to, once you're doing this kind of work, it disengages your emotion. Now, you know, gut feel and things like that can be fantastic, but you're doing this as a business. It's not something you do for, oh my goodness, I'm going to live here, it's going to be so beautiful. You're really doing this as a business, and the numbers are what matters. So do your feasibility, stick to your numbers, stick to your guidelines, and the more preparation you do to get to that point where you know what your tap out point is, you know what your conditions are going to be, you know exactly what you're looking for, then it takes all the fear out of it, and it takes all of the emotion out of getting caught up in something that maybe you might regret later on, like, you know, bidding too high at an auction. Something that often happens too, not an auction obviously, but when you get into a bidding war and you get an offer and then you get a counter offer and then you go back and then you get another one, I don't find that particularly healthy. And I think it's important to step away from the emotion of that as well, because when you're offering and counter offering and things, you can get very caught up in, oh, I've got to get the property or you know, the buyer's going to walk away if I don't do this, depending on which side of the negotiation you're actually on. And I always find it's beneficial if you go in with strength. So you sit back, you don't get pushed into timeframes. You sit back and you might let something, you know, sit overnight. Now, obviously, you've got to be careful in a hot market and things like that. But if an offer is in play, generally a seller will wait till the next morning to get a better offer or whatever. So I like to let it sit for a little bit. And then if I'm going to counter, I counter with something that is strong and I put a time limit on it. So, you know, I'll put in whatever my price is, and the offer stands until 5 o'clock this afternoon. And other than that, I'm out. And if you get into that backwards and forwards business, it's a good idea to stop it at that and go, this is my final offer. You've got to 5 o'clock this afternoon to accept that offer. Otherwise, I'm out. I'll find something else, you know. And don't get emotional about it. There's always another deal. There's always another deal around the corner that you can get excited about. So don't feel bad if you lose a few through the process either. I do like to talk to a seller in person, and the reason for that is because I think I do a better job of negotiating on my behalf than any real estate agent in the middle. Now, that can be as a seller and as a buyer. It's not normal, and most real estate agents don't like you to do that. I mean, that's what they get taught. Don't let your buyers and sellers talk to each other. But I seem to have an ability to be able to get around the real estate agents. Not that I'm trying to cut them out, but just by getting them to a point where they realize that this deal is going to run a lot smoother if we can talk turkey with each other. Now, if you're being blocked by a real estate agent over and over again, something that has worked in the past on my recommendation with students is to actually find the seller, go and talk to them. Now, you can knock on the door and say, look, I've been offering on your property. I'm not trying to cut the real estate agent out, but there's a few things that I've put on there, like conditions or whatever else, that I kind of think I'm getting the runaround from the real estate agent. I'd like to hear it from you. If we could cut a deal, then I'll go back to the real estate agent and get them to draw up the contract and whatever else. And believe it or not, that's actually helped enormously, particularly where you've had a crappy real estate agent in the middle who hasn't been relaying things in the right manner. Now, you might say, no, look, I don't want to talk to you or talk to my real estate agent. You've got to be able to accept that and move on and not feel bad about taking that action. But it is something that, you know, I've had success with, and students have had success with in the past as well. So, you know, it's really about getting a bit of tough skin there to see that, you know, that you do want to do that. But it can work, is all I'm saying. It's very important when you do to come to an agreement on anything that you actually put it into writing. Now, this is, I often do it at the negotiation table. I've negotiated a number of situations where you sit around a kitchen table and you decide on how the deal can go down. And regardless of whether the agent's there or not, I will write a handwritten, what I call a memorandum of understanding. And we go through point by point by point, detailing, you know, what we've agreed on. And at the end of it, you're reading it out, they're looking at you writing it, they're adding things, you're adding things. It really adds a lot of weight that this is something that the two of us have agreed on together. And it's very important if you're doing a deal that's a little bit different. So not just a straight out price deal, but you know, you might want special conditions. You might want access prior. You might want 6 months to settle. You might want, you know, management rights, whatever. There's lots of different things that could be put into there that it's better to have the understanding directly, because if things are a little bit different, by the time it gets to the lawyers, lawyers are the best at screwing up a deal. My lawyers are going to hate me for saying this, but it's true. Their job is to tell you the worst case scenario every single time. And quite often, it ruins a good deal. Understand the risks of what they're saying. Take that information on board. And make your own decision accordingly, you know, in full knowledge that, you know, they're doing their job. They're going to tell you this is the worst case scenario and this could happen and that could happen and you get sued and whatever else. You've got to understand those risks and then decide whether you, you know, want to go down that track or not. But by writing out the memorandum of understanding face to face, what it does do, and I get it signed by, you know, if I'm negotiating and the other party get it signed down the bottom, what it does do, it takes away some of the element of risk that you may have when the thing gets to the lawyers and they start to, you know, go, oh, but you should have had this clause, that clause, whatever else in there. So that's important to do as well. Then follow up. So once the negotiation is done, follow up with an email, just a little, just, you know, thanks for meeting with me today, or thanks for this, really excited about doing the deal, you know, can't wait to have a drink with you or something or other, whatever it is, I don't know, or, you know, or handover of whatever. So you really cement what the contract has been. So we agreed on this, we agreed on this, or you attach the memorandum of understanding that you've handwritten on the day to them, and they can then, that's sort of acknowledgement that this is what we've agreed on, just sending you a copy, fantastic to meet you, all of that kind of stuff. The next thing is, I mean, is know your strengths, because everybody will have a different strength. Now, I believe my strength is face-to-face. I have a friend whose strength is very much in the writing. She writes beautiful letters, she has beautiful handwriting, and she you know, articulates herself very well on paper. So sit back and think about what are your strengths, and you know, and really play to those strengths, because, you know, if you're good at humor, well, use that. If you're good at the English language, use that. If English is not your first language, tell people that. Say, English isn't my first language, so don't be upset if I say something a little bit wrong. That's okay. I would rather people say that, because then something that's said might have a different connotation, a different, you know, inclination, etc., where you're better off to say, hey, this is how it is. And I know this from a fact. I mean, my husband, is English is not his first language. So sometimes he says things that are a little bit off that you go, I'm sure that's not what you actually mean. But if you took it literally, what he was saying, it was what he was trying to say, as opposed to you know, the connotation, the inclination, which he may not necessarily get. And that applies to anyone whose English is not their first language. I'm sure I would be exactly the same in another language as well. You know, there's six deadly sins when it comes to negotiation. And one of them is a failure to identify the situation. This really comes from all of that background information. You want to find out as much information as you possibly can about the scenario, about the seller, about the buyer, about, you know, their limits, about what they want to do when they sell the property, where their kids are. All of these, what I call third level questions, really paint a complete picture of how that person is situated from a negotiation perspective, which really helps you then to do a number of things. One of them is to create a win-win scenario so that you can accommodate the things that are important to them. And the other is to make sure that you have that you know how to approach them on certain topics that maybe they're very strong on and maybe you're not. Lack of planning has to be, you know, the second most deadly sin that you can have, and that is all of that preparation work that I talked about there before. Accepting the power of perception is another deadly sin. So what I mean by that is, you know, don't always accept the what is being said to you. Really question everything. Find out things from other sources to make sure that you've got, you know, that you are getting the right story, the right angle on the story, those sort of things. Conceding instead of trading. So this is something where, you know, you give in on something. If they come back with a counter offer, you say, okay, well, I'll accept that counter offer, but I want a longer settlement time, or I want access prior to settlement, or I want whatever. So you're actually trading positions, which is an important skill when it comes to negotiation, and that's an important skill in everything, actually. Refusal to explore alternatives and options is another deadly sin where, you know, there's always a way to do something. If you can understand as much as you can about the other party, then you can normally work out a way of giving them what they want and still getting what you want. Let me give you an example. Let's say the seller is really, really fixed on price. You go, all right, I will give you the price, but I'm going to need some stuff in return. You might ask for a 12-month settlement with access prior, or the ability to be able to lodge a DA with counsel, or all of these other things where, you know, it's really time frame that's important to you rather more than price. Or they might want a quick settlement. You, well, I can give you a quick settlement, but that'll mean I can only offer you this much in price. So there's always a way around things. So be flexible in the negotiation process. And not confirming an understanding of commitment. So this is really where we're talking about writing out a memorandum of understanding, following up with a confirmation email, putting everything in writing and that kind of stuff. And you know, when you finish a negotiation, whether it's successful or unsuccessful, I think it's very important to do a little bit of a post-mortem and to look at, well, what could I have done better? You know, where did this negotiation go awry? Why did this negotiation go really well? What were the elements in there? Because the more you understand about your negotiations one way or another, the better you can perform the next time. And I always keep my files, you know, whether they're computer files or manual files, I always like to keep my files on areas where I've been doing research and negotiation on people and places and all of those sort of things. And because you can always refer back to them, it's actually really important, particularly when you're watching an area, to refer back to, well, what were the prices 3 months ago? What were the prices 6 months ago? And you've got that time record there of, of your files and what they've done. And those files are pretty important. So I hope that's helped today. Now, look, if you're liking what I'm doing, if you like some of the topics that I'm talking about, I'm really, really interested in your comments. I'd love to know what you'd like to know more of, because I'm really happy to discuss any topic that you send through to me. And the other thing that I'm going to be doing is I'm going to give away prizes. Now, I've written a stack of books, and I'm going to give send out a surprise book to the people who actually comment. I'll select a different one every week. And if you make a comment on my on the iTunes, please go in there. I know it's a bit of a hassle, but please go in and rate my podcasts. It really helps me, and it gives me the ability then to be able to do what you want. You know, if you put a little comment in there about some of the topics that you'd like me to discuss, I'm very happy to do so. So that's it for me today, guys. I hope you've enjoyed it. And if you're enjoying them, as I say, make a comment there and also tell your friends about it. Thanks for listening today, and I will be back again to talk to you very, very soon. Bye for now.